She said, rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome, welcome to Country Joe's Chicken Show here on countryjoeschickenshow.com. My name is Karen Watts, also known as Karen at petoftheday.com, where, you know, if you have a pet chicken, you could nominate it for Pet of the Day. And right now, we are flying without Joe. So I have our first guest with us, Dr. Phil Sponenberg, and he has an article in Backyard Poultry called Poultry Breeds, What Are They Anyway? Welcome to Country Joe's Chicken Show, Dr. Phil.
Thank you very much.
You know, how did you, before we get into the specifics of what poultry breeds are, how did you get involved in poultry and genetics in the first place, just out of curiosity?
Well, most of my background is just in livestock breed conservation, and I work with the Livestock Conservancy, and we've been working with both mammals and poultry for a long, long time, probably over 40 years. And so the interest just sort of snowballed and includes poultry as well as other types of livestock.
Okay, yes, we've had guests from the Poultry Conservancy, from the Livestock Conservancy on before. And when people, you know, it's funny because I run a website called Pet of the Day and Dog of the Day and Cat of the Day. And people will say, my dog is a cockapoo, thinking that's a breed when actually that's a breed mix. And I'm sure that same thing happens with poultry. So could you explain for someone who doesn't know what a breed is and why it's important?
Well, it gets complicated. our definition is that it's basically a genetic resource, so that the birds, are, in this case chickens, would all be similar enough to one another that you would basically group them together. So that, and then when you breed them back together again, you get the same thing back again. And so basically it has enough genetic uniformity and consistency to reproduce that same bird generation after generation. And that's different than a lot of the commercial hybrids, and they are hybrids, and so when you breed them together, you get something altogether different.
Is that like when I was a kid, we'd order seeds from Burpee for the garden, and some of them were hybrids and some of them weren't. And my dad explained to me, if a seed's a hybrid, you know, you're not necessarily going to get zucchini if you save some of the seeds and plant it. You're not going to get the same thing you got that seed from.
Yes, that's basically what's going on. It's very, very similar to either, you know, people might contrast hybrid seeds like hybrid tomatoes with heritage or heirloom tomatoes, and it's exactly that sort of thing.
Right. Okay. And with chickens, I know chickens started, where are they originally from? Is it Southeast Asia?
Yeah, it seems to be Southeast Asia, maybe the Vietnam era area, maybe South China. And there's a little bit of different evidence, different ways, and I'm not the expert on that, but certainly Southeast Asia.
And so the different, you list in the articles that, and breeds are all, these are all breeds that, of course, people have developed over time. And so you have the old foundation breeds. And how old are these?
Well, the old, that, how old is old? That's a question that's almost impossible to answer.
And so some of the breeds. I didn't mean to do that to you.
That's okay. But some of the breeds, like the Dominic, are probably several hundred years old. And then if you go to things, I'm doing this from memory, but we'll see what we can do. The Brahma and the Cochin are probably a couple hundred years old. And then things like the Dorking may actually be several hundred years old. And some of the Mediterranean breeds, like the Spanish and Ancona, Catalana, things like that, they actually may be multiple hundreds of years old. Probably nothing that goes back thousands and thousands of years, unless you get into strange things from South Asia and Southeast Asia. But most of the European, you know, some of the European breeds would go back a couple hundred years, and anything that's over 150 would be considered pretty old. And you got to remember that if you're talking horses, then the generation is about 10 years, 5 to 10 years, whereas with chickens, it's 1 year. So you can make a lot of changes, you know, year after year. So that 150 years actually adds up in chickens to be quite a few generations.
Right, as opposed to you know, horses are 10 years. People, a generation counts as 20 to 25 years.
Right.
So, and chickens are a lot faster at reproducing than we are. You know, I was interested to see the Brahma on the list of breeds because, believe it or not, even though I'm the co-host of Country Joe's Chicken Show, I've never seen or heard of a Brahma chicken. I know Brahma bulls are the ones with the big hump in their back, you know, gorgeous, smooth-coated. What's a Brahma chicken?
I have Brahma, so they're the best chicken on the planet. <they're>...
Boy, I walked right into that one, didn't I?
Yes, you did. The importance, what interests me especially are the extremes that you have, and the Brahmas are one of the largest breeds. And so they're very, very big, very thick chickens, and they have feathers on their feet, so they're quite unique. And all of that uniqueness and appearance points to a uniqueness genetically as well. So that's why I'm sort of interested in those that don't look like anything else. And when you go back to the old isolated breeds, the more unique they look and the older they are, the more that means that they're different than anything else. So all that goes together to make sort of a unified picture.
Now, are Brahmas solid colored or vari colored, or what color are Brahmas chickens?
Well, in the United States, three of the varieties are standardized, and that light is white with some black on the head and on the tail and on the feet, and then the dark would be that silver and black color with more black throughout it, and then the buffs are like the lights, but they're sort of a light brown where the lights are white. So the three varieties. In Europe, there's many, many more varieties, and some of the American breeders are now starting to import those and to play around with that genetics. So that's sort of a changing thing.
Yeah, well, you know, anything with the feathered feet is going to look exotic anyway. I know that's something that people really notice about silkies is that, that, you know, they look like they're wearing slippers with those feathery feet.
And we've had silkies silkies would be another really good example of something that's pretty extreme. And since they come out of Asia, they're probably pretty old. So the combination of that feather type and the skin type and the feathered feet, all those things go together to make a pretty unique chicken.
Yes, you know, we've actually had several silkies over the years be pet of the day, and people are always amazed to see, you know, it's the Phyllis Diller of the chicken world. We are running out of time for this segment. Dr. Sponenberg, will you stick with me?
Sure, I'll stick with you.
Excellent. And hopefully we can get Joe in himself, because I know he's going to have a bucket load of questions, even more than I will. Folks, we'll be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show here on countryjoeschickenshow.com. Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show, and we're talking with Phil, who's Dr. Sponenberg, who is now, I know you're at the university. Can you tell people what your job is, how you're so interested in working with genetics?
Well, I'm actually a professor at a veterinary college, and they pay me to be a pathologist, but I've always been interested in genetics and in breed conservation, so I do that too. So it's sort of a two-pronged job.
So do you work with pathology with poultry or other breeds, or is that just a completely separate?
It tends to be completely separate. Most of what we do is diagnosis for the clinic here, and that includes very, very few chickens and more dogs, cats, horses, and cows, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, most people who have chickens probably wouldn't even consider taking them to the vet unless something completely abnormal happened. And chickens seem to be, the chickens that I know have been pretty easygoing sort of critters.
That's true. As backyard chickens become more and more popular, there's actually now some continued education for veterinarians with small animal practices to learn more about chickens and their management and their diseases and how we can actually help, because they can actually last a pretty long time. My grandma had a chicken that lasted 23 years.
So wow. That's impressive favorite. For a chicken.
That was her favorite pet. Wherever grandma went, that chicken went too.
That's right. You know, and that's why, you know, there are lots of people who have chickens, but there are only a few who have them that are pet chickens. And my cousin's kids all grew up knowing the difference between whether it was chickens or rabbits, what the difference was. Because if it was a pet, you could name it.
Ah.
But if it was going to be dinner, you just called it that one.
Well,
now, do you have chickens yourself? You said you have Brahmas?
Yes, we have Brahma chickens.
And have you raised them for a long time? Or,
no.
And are they a meat chicken or a layer? Or?
Brahmas are just big chickens, and they lay well enough for us, but they grow slowly, and then they do end up being quite large. But we also raise livestock guard dogs, and part of the reason for having the chickens is to make sure the dogs are well socialized to poultry, and the Brahmas just fascinated me, so that's what we got.
And they're big enough to give a nosy dog sort of a
Actually, the dogs have done quite well. The dogs have done quite well with the chickens, so we don't really have any complaints there. You know, and just don't lose any to predators, don't have to lock up the birds, so the whole system's working for us.
That's right. You know, and it's interesting because some dogs absolutely need to have a job to do. So it's it's good. I know from doing dog of the day for so long, if you get a breed that's a guard breed and it has nothing to do all day, it will eat your furniture if you lock it in an apartment with nothing to do. So,
right. Well, yeah, we don't have that problem.
Now, and when you are dealing with the Brahmas and the other old breeds, is there something genetically that you look for if you are raising them? Do you have to be careful who you cross them with or and things like that?
Well, the main goal is to keep within the breed, so that you want to make sure that that breed stays pure and it stays available. And, you know, you're trying to also make sure that the birds are selected for productivity, so growth rate or egg production or things like that. And then many, many people will also select them for, you know, the perfection of form, so the conformation and the color, and those people are interested in showing, and all those things go together to make a productive breed. And through the Livestock Conservancy, some of that combination has been real useful. So they had the Buckeye Project, which is a fairly old breed and uniquely American. And they started selecting them for production characters and ended up with birds that were also winning the shows. So you can have it all. You can have show winners that are also productive for eggs and productive for meat.
Now, I saw you have the list. This is the shortest list, so I'll read it for our listeners, of old breeds from a blend of primary breeds, which include the Barred Plymouth Rock, the Buckeye, which you just mentioned, the Houdan, the La Fleche, Modern Game, New Hampshire Red Cap, and Rhode Island Red. Now, I grew up in South Central Massachusetts, so right close to the Rhode Island border, and I always thought Rhode Island Red was a breed of chicken that was just, that's all it was. It was just the Rhode Island Red. I didn't know that was a blend.
Well, it comes from things that are older, and I can't off the top of my head tell you exactly what those are, but it comes from things that they blended, you know, a century or more ago. So
right.
they're still old.
They're still old, and of course, I'm less than 100 years old, so they have been their own breed within my lifetime.
Yes, it turns out that they were a combination of red Malay game chickens, Leghorns, and some other Asiatic sort of chickens, all blended there in New England for a production chicken.
And the title Modern Game as a breed, that sounds like a category, not like a particular breed. What is it about the Modern Game that makes it a breed?
I am no expert on game chickens, but there's a...
I know that game chickens in general tend to be, you know, taller, longer-legged.
Right, and that's true of the modern game, and they were especially developed also for exhibition. In the past, they were always selected for cockfighting, and as that fell out of favor, more and more of them are used for exhibition, and we won't talk a lot about cockfighting, but
yes.
There's many, many, many old strains of game chickens in America, some of them, you know, over 100 years old, usually with a different family name. So if we try to pick apart the game chickens, we would end up with a list that's easily 50 breeds long, you know, just from things that have been isolated that long. And at that point, you throw your hands up because you can't manage that at all.
Right. Now, of the primary old foundation breeds, you said the Brahma is your favorite. What is the oldest of those breeds that you list? I know Joe himself, I was hoping we'd have him on. I know he has Dorkings, and I think he has some Golden Campines.
Yes, and those would also be old. Probably the Dorking of the European breeds is one of the oldest. Icelandic chickens are probably really, really old, too, because once you get to Iceland, nothing else comes in. And they're interesting because they're quite variable for looks, but all the genetics goes back to that original Scandinavian chicken that showed up 1,000 years ago. So, you know, they're pretty unique. And there's lots of different, you know, old ones, and we each have our favorite. And it's not that one's better than the other, it's just that's what appeals to me.
That's right. Well, that's like, you know, having a purebred dog. There's a lot of difference between a pug and a Great Dane, but they're all someone's favorite, and they're all perfectly nice purebred dogs.
Right.
Now, we are out of time for this segment. Will you stick with me for one more?
Sure.
All right, folks, we'll be right back with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show. Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show. We have with us our guest, Dr. Sponenberg, and we're talking about breeds and why is it important that these old breeds get, you know, conserved? Why is it important that, you know, we don't just let the chickens breed willy-nilly with whatever chicken they encounter?
Well, part of that is each one of these chicken breeds is sort of a record of the people that brought the chicken to being. And so, mm-hmm. almost like saving historical buildings, there's a really compelling reason to save chicken breeds, just because it, you know, somebody did this and they did it for a reason. So many of them are pretty well adapted to different situations and provide eggs and meat for, you know, different environments, different climates, different ways of life. And all of those things are important, and it's important to save them. One of the reasons is strictly just this cultural sort of conservation, historic preservation idea. And the other is that we don't really know what the future is going to hold. So as long as we have continuity in the poultry production, then we're set. But as soon as we change the rules, we're not set. And there is a pretty good example. The Danes used to have chickens that would be in an open floor system where the chickens would go up and they'd lay in the nest, and then they would go back down on the floor and be in their group. And then the industry decided that it was a little bit cleaner to go ahead and keep them in cages. So they moved all the chickens into cages, and that meant they changed breeds. And so then the public decided that, well, we don't really like the idea of chickens in cages, so they went back to chickens on the floor. But they had basically gotten rid of that original breed. I think it was the Aarhus chicken. And now they were using Leghorns, and Leghorns don't do the floor laying trick very well because they're pretty well adapted to the cage system. And that would just be an industrial example of the need for all these different breeds out there, because each breed does something a little bit differently. And if you have a system that matches the breed, then you're going to have better success.
And are there, like, immunities or adaptations in particular breeds that, you know, I know, like, a chicken with a big fancy comb is not going to do well in Iceland because it'll get frostbite more easily. Are there things like that that mean a chicken will do great for Joe in Florida, but not so great for me up in the Boston area?
Yes, and that's exactly one reason for keeping all these different breeds. So as you pointed out, those breeds with the really, really large floppy single combs just don't do well where it gets really, really cold because they will get frostbitten. And then some of the breeds with the real tight rose combs and tight walnut combs and pea combs, they're not going to do very well in really, really hot areas because they can't get rid of the heat. And you can go through with all the different, you know, densities of feathers and things like that. All those things kind of mirror that, so that some breeds make more sense for hot climates, some breeds make more sense for cold climates.
And another thing that I know is that I know that the bug population is different, for example, for Joe in Florida than it is for you in the mountains in Virginia, than it is for me in the New England area. Do the different chickens eat different things, or will all chickens eat all the bugs they can get a hold of?
I don't know. I suspect that all chickens will eat all the bugs they can get a hold of, from what I've seen.
Yeah, I had someone in a panic post that on our, we have a forum on our website, on our Pet of the Day website, and someone with a conure was panicked because she thinks her conure ate a ladybug because she found one ladybug wing at the bottom of his cage. And she said, is this going to kill him? I'm like, no, in fact, he probably thought it was a great treat. So
yeah.
Even fancy, you know, tropical birds, I think any bug that they come across is probably
yes.
fair game.
And if we can find one that really, really likes stink bugs, we'll be all set.
That's right. You know, there was my sister-in-law suspected a bug that got in my mom-in-law's house yesterday was a stink bug, and my mother-in-law was ready to squash it, and my sister-in-law said, no, don't do that, because then it'll smell awful. So she captured it in Tupperware and repatriated it to the greater outdoors. Now, are chickens of, you said like the Brahmas are a big chicken, a heavyweight chicken. Mm-hmm. Would they do better in a colder climate or a warmer climate, or does that not make a difference as much as feather and comb and things like that?
Probably the feathers and the comb make the biggest difference, but the bigger, heavier birds are going to do a little bit better where it's cooler, a little bit less well where it's really, really hot.
And with the feathered feet they have, would that be a problem in like a hot, I'm thinking of Joe in Florida, where it can get hot and really, really humid. Is there anything you have to worry about with feathered feet, like any mold or mildew or things like that? Or do the feathers stay clean?
I don't know the answer to that. well, and the exhibition people will house the birds very, very carefully on, you know, deep sawdust and things like that. We just have ours out on pasture. So while they have feathered feet, they are not really, really pretty feathered feet. So they do adapt, but if you wanted a picture-perfect bird, you'd have to manage them a little bit more intensively than I do.
Well, and of course, that's true of any show animal. If you're going to show them, you know, the people who have their Maltese with the long flowing coat, that just doesn't work on an everyday, you know, if he's going to be a dog running around the yard and wrestling with your children and going through the swamp. So you have to keep your Maltese out of those situations if you want him to be a show dog as opposed to, you know, a regular old dog running around with the neighborhood with the kids.
That's right.
And I'm sure that's true with chickens as well. When people show chickens, do they have to be of a certain age, or, you know, do chickens only look their best up until a certain age?
I am no expert on the show scene. but some of the breeds actually mature more slowly, and so they're going to actually look their best at 2 and 3 years old. I believe the Sicilian buttercup is one of those. Other ones are going to look, you know, pretty good younger, and most of the breeders are going to want, you know, full development. So for the fall shows, they usually want a bird that was born fairly early in the spring, so that they reach their maximum growth and they have all their feathers in and everything looks perfect.
Yes, I know that's one thing about chickens, that they're adorable when they're first hatched, fluffy little chicks, and then they go through a really awkward stage when they're getting their adult feathers in and losing their fluff. And there are some people who are not quite sure that's still a chicken.
Right.
when they're at that stage. So I'm sure they wouldn't want to show them at that stage. Right. You know, and you mentioned some chickens living to be to old age. Is that something as a veterinarian that there are other things? Do you have to watch out for arthritis and things like that we do with the old dogs and cats?
So few chickens live to be that old that it's usually not much of a concern. But yeah, you'd have the same problems that you would with other animals.
And I know your grandmother's chicken was a much loved chicken, so probably was too spoiled to get any of the ravages of old age.
Yes.
Well, you know, I wanted to thank you for being on the show. We're running out of time. Do you have a website or anything if people wanted to look at your conservancy work or anything?
No. Well, the livestockconservancy.com. Livestockconservancy.com is for the Livestock Conservancy, and there's our list of breeds there, and with critical threatened watch, recovering, depending on how many are out there, and some educational materials on how to get started and what we're doing with those.
Well, excellent. You know, thank you so much for being on the show today and for answering all my questions, even if they weren't the ones you were expecting, you know, and I'm sure Joe is going to be really annoyed that he missed talking to you.
Well, you're very welcome, and I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. Folks, we'll be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show. From petoftheday.com, we are missing Joe himself. I suspect he is out with a flock right now as we speak, as we're doing the show. We have our next guest with us, and this is Greg Wall, and he is with Grow2Max is the product they have, and it's BioNaturals America. Did I get that right, Greg?
That's BioNatural America. That's the company.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I saw that you do... biotics, blah, 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 blah. Sorry,
all,
why don't you explain to people?
Right. All of our products are probiotic-based. So our primary focus is natural health supplements for animals. And Grow2Max is basically our main product, our most popular product for sure. And it's for poultry, waterfowl, other birds, some people with pigeons or game birds use it as well. But it's primarily chickens, farms, hatcheries, and backyard chicken keepers will use the Grow2Max as a feed supplement.
And I was going to ask, so it is a feed supplement? It's just something you put in their feed or in their water? Or what form does it come in, and how do people use it?
It's in powder form. It's basically freeze-dried beneficial microbials are in the powder form. And that is most people mix it with water because it will disperse more evenly in water, and those suspended microbes will become active when they hit that moisture. But the same also applies with feed. You can mix it with feed, and some people do it that way. Just whatever works best. I think water tends to work a little bit better for most people.
And water is sometimes easier to control than feed, especially if you're giving them scratch feed or things like that.
Right, exactly. You can, when people ask about, you know, dosage recommendations, I always base it on the consumption of water, because that way it's just easiest to measure. It basically works out to like a teaspoon and a half per gallon. So a little bit goes a long way, and it just adds some pretty vital elements to their diet that tend to be missing from, you know, processed feed and, you know, the type of diet that a chicken might get out in the wild. You know, it's going to be have to be modified a little bit because certain things are missing, you know, in the commercial chick production and you know, raising them in the backyard. And also there's, plenty of economic benefit for farms based on the results that they'll get from, you know, chickens that are supplemented with a probiotic.
Now, what is in, you say probiotic, but I know there are a lot of people out there who don't know what a probiotic is and what it means.
Right. So, I think people most commonly associate it with yogurt.
Right.
Right. It's something that contains basically with good bacteria. So generally, an easy way to understand it is there's, you know, a balance of good and sometimes bad bacteria in the digestive system. But if you introduce actively more of the good, then it will fight off the bad and keep things balanced. And and then all the health benefits that are associated with that will occur. So similar to yogurt, but yogurt tends to contain, most yogurts, maybe 1, 2, or 3 strains. We put 5 strains in our Grotomax, so each strain performs or carries with it maybe a different benefit. So there's more of a well-rounded positive effect.
Now, will this
Basically, it's good. It's good bacteria fighting bad. So, and it's the kind of thing that's often lost in when food is being processed because of the temperatures and things like that will kill it off. And, you know, people think of antibiotics, something that's commonly used to fight diseases, and this is sort of the opposite approach. Rather than just sort of destroying all the bacteria or much of it in the digestive system, this sort of fights the bad by increasing the population of the good. So probiotic as opposed to antibiotic.
Right. Now, I know a lot of people are worried about antibiotics in their food, that a lot of commercial growers, you know, give massive doses of antibiotics to some. We don't recommend that here on Country Joe's Chicken Show. And Joe is concerned with, you know, doing all natural as much as possible. Does this count as all natural or organic, or what category would this come under if you use the Grotomax?
It's all natural. We're working on the organic certification, so we don't label it as organic just yet, but it's definitely all natural, and there does seem to be a positive trend moving away from antibiotics and the sort of natural replacement to perform similar role is the probiotic. So we recommend it for people who are looking to reduce or hopefully potentially eliminate the need for antibiotics. And certainly a lot of the benefits of probiotics are such that the types of diseases that antibiotics are used to treat will not necessarily arise because of the preventative health maintenance that probiotic supplementation provides. So, it's a good trend. It's good for, you know, there's nothing chemical in it. There's nothing hazardous whatsoever. It's all just good nature. So.
Right. It's nothing you have to worry about if you get it on your hands while you're trying to get it into the water or anything, which is...
No, and in fact, I mean, if a human could pour some in a glass of water and drink some down too, it's perfectly... There's nothing harmful at all about it. It's all naturally occurring in nature. This is just a way of providing a greater abundance of that, the good elements, the good microbiotic elements into the diet. So,
That's right. You know, we are running out of time for this segment, Greg. Will you stick with me? Because, of course, I have more questions for you, being of the curious type. And I'm sure you have more things you'd like to tell to people. So, folks, we'll be right back with more Country Joe's Chicken Show. Hang on.
Rearrange my family tree. A chicken is what I want to be.
Welcome back to Country Joe's Chicken Show. Now we have with us Greg Wall, who's from Bionaturals.
Bionatural America.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about Grow to Max, which is your probiotics for chickens. Now, is this something you should have if someone has backyard chickens, say, you know, they have a flock of, you know, 6 or 8 chickens. Is this something that will help even a small flock like that?
Yes. I mean, I sometimes have to clarify that the name of the product might be a little bit misleading because it's not something that's just designed to be some sort of growth enhancer for commercial purposes or whatnot. The natural growth occurs because of, you know, a variety of the benefits, such as increased or enhanced absorption of nutrients and that sort of thing. But I do recommend it for backyard keepers. And some of our customers, you know, just have a few birds in the yard and will buy it. You know, if one of them is experiencing some symptoms like diarrhea or something like that, some sort of gastrointestinal condition that they want to help remedy. So they'll just use a little bit of the product at a time, you know, during periods of stress, whatnot. Some people use it regularly, like once every day, once every few days or so, just to kind of maintain the healthy balance of good bacteria in their system.
Right, you know, and I think I just keep thinking of when you have taken a course of antibiotics, people tell you you should have some yogurt, and I'm, of course, allergic to yogurt because that's just the kind of person I am.
It's smart. It's wise, yeah.
Is the Grow to Max, you said it's not, you know, it's not made to, like, it's like not like my aunt used to accuse my mother of putting fertilizer between our toes because we grew so fast. It's not that kind of product. You're not trying to create super chickens with this.
Right, exactly. You know, that does come as a sort of a positive effect from, you know, just the general benefits of the product.
Right.
But, you know, certainly it's perfectly good to use you know, during periods, occasional periods, such as with, you know, antibiotic use, because antibiotics will, like I said, they'll wipe out all the bacteria, both good and bad. So adding a little bit of this during or after that kind of treatment, or, you know, with worming, that sort of thing as well, will repopulate the digestive system with the good bacteria. So it'll get the chicken's digestive system in balance. You know,
yes, I was going to ask, you mentioned worming briefly. Is this something you should do in conjunction with worming or after worming? Because I know people who are experiencing or raising chickens for the first time get really freaked out when they hear they have to worm or deworm their chickens.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. And I mean, I've heard good things and positive things from our customers who use Grow to Max as a kind of, you know, alleviation of symptoms when worming. So any little natural kind of boost, you know, probiotic-wise can help in those types of situations. So it's always good to have some on hand, you know, if you're not necessarily going to use it as a regular part of the diet. at least to have some around for those occasions when there is some sort of health condition that could be helped out from, you know, some sort of natural dietary assistance, like with a probiotic supplement.
And another thing is, I know that after you treat some worming products, people shouldn't eat the eggs that are produced for a week or 10 days sometimes. Is the Grotumax something you have to worry about egg production, or does it just help, you know, a healthier chicken will make healthier eggs and you don't have to worry about that?
Right, exactly. In fact, you tend to get a better quality egg, and, you know, for a farm raising broilers, they'll get a better quality meat. And in some cases, you know, larger egg. I tell people to add more calcium to the feed if that's the case, strengthen the shell. And I've heard others tell me, you know, give me numbers of the increased egg production that they've seen after giving Grotumax. So, you know, I don't necessarily sell the product as, you know, something that's going to produce X result, but, you know, certainly get all sorts of positive reports from, you know, the many benefits of the probiotic from a variety of customers. So, and we put all those testimonials on our website. You do hear good things in terms of egg results.
Now, before we end the show, I want to give you a chance. You just mentioned you have a website. Do you want to list that so that people know where to find your company and where to find Grotumax, and how would somebody buy it? Is it available in stores, or, tell our listeners about all that.
Grotumax, it comes in 3.5-ounce foil packages. Keeps the product stable for quite a long time inside the package. Mixes with up to 28 gallons of water or 400 pounds of feed in just that one package. And you can buy them directly from the website, or there's a few online retailers that sell it. It's in, I think, around 35 or so feed stores throughout the country. In some areas, it's easier to find than others, but, you know, we add stores here and there. But it's probably easiest just to find it through the website.
And so what is your website, if you could spell it out for people?
It's www.grotumax.com. It's written out as GRO2MAX.com.
So it's important that you don't put the W in there and you don't spell out two. So it's just GRO.
We own the W version too. Just to cover that, just in case people type it in wrong, it'll direct to our real website. That's us. And if anybody ever has any questions, they can contact us through the website, email or call. And, you know, we're happy to answer any questions and explain the product in more detail.
Well, excellent. So it sounds like this is, you know, good for big producers like Joe himself, who has, you know, several hundred chickens at a time, or could be fine for someone, like you mentioned, with, you know, six hens in the backyard.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So I want to thank you for being on the show today. We are running out of time. I want to thank you so much. Folks, you've been listening to Country Joe's Chicken Show. You're on CountryJoesChickenShow.com. And you want to give your phone number or just the website one more time, Greg?
Well, the website, all the contact information is on the website at GRO2MAX.com.
Thank you so much for being with us. And folks, we'll be back next week with more of Country Joe's Chicken Show.